This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Jangan percaya orang lelaki, berani sumpah dia takut mati.
This is Front Row on a Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. Like many, you must have had and read the expressed sentiments of our citizens of being moved to tears singing Negaraku when gathered either on Dataran Merdeka, the KLCC Park, or in the vicinity of Pasar Seni, singing unaccompanied by a marching band or a symphonic orchestra. Just voices, not the trained kind that would be invited to be in a formal choir, but voices collectively singing the song of the rakyat. Though we have soaked in the lines, we may not have soaked in the story of this anthem and how it came to be. Last year, Malam Terang Bulan was performed to invited guests only at the Dewan Philharmonic Petronas. This performance of the spoken word, music and songs tells the Negaraku story. It is being reprised later this month, and with me are Saida Rastam, composer, creator and director of this performance, and Chako Vadaketh, a performer and one of BFM's news readers. As a director of this performance, especially since it was staged last year, what did you have to do differently this year?
Not much. I think the essence of it is exactly the same. We've added a couple of songs. I'm quite keen on audience participation. I don't know
what does that mean?
Oh, that means not just performing.
Sing along.
Yeah, yeah.
And I assume the sing-along, since it's about the Negaraku, is that the only song that they'll be singing along to?
Well, you'll have to come and see.
This performance is based on what you have researched for your book, Rosalie and Other Love Songs.
Yes.
What do you have to do to take printed words on a page to put it on the stage?
Gosh, Chako, you're the theatre buff. Can you?
Well, you created it, but... Well, got people like me and Zahim to tell the story. I think we're the narrators, so we tell the story of Negaraku. But it's not just about Negaraku. It's about the music of Malaya, or the music that shaped Malaya.
Are the words taken from the book, the words that you narrate?
The original script was, but after Chako and Zahim had finished with it, I'm not sure what's left.
Well, you know.
You changed her words.
A little bit. I mean, we tweaked
you
it.
You changed
so
history?
No, not the facts. Or the facts that we know. I think the interesting thing is there are a number of things that we don't know for sure what the facts are, including the story of how Negaraku came to be an anthem.
Is the history of it still pretty fuzzy or hazy?
I think quite a lot of it is surprisingly clear. Yes. Yeah. Surprisingly clear. So that makes it so that it's quite curious how come everybody's so emotional about the anthem, but so little is actually known publicly. If you go to the internet, the same thing is being copied and pasted, but actually a lot of information is out there if people only care to look.
What needed to be done so that we could see this thing on the stage?
Well, it's a concert with narration, and the show is presented theatrically. So you hear the music. I think that's a big difference. The book talks about different styles of music or different songs that were popular at that time. And here you suddenly hear it, and you hear it with the full orchestra playing. So that's an amazing experience.
Rindulah, rindu. So we get to hear music, not just the Negaraku, but music from that era.
Yes, exactly. In fact, the project started as a device to convince people of the argument that some of the most beautiful songs in the world were created in Malaya. So it's one thing to write a book about it, was the proof. And this is why the concert is there, to bring it to life.
As the writer of the book, Saida, how long did it take you to kind of research and ferret out all this information?
I underestimated it. The project was supposed to be 1 year. It ended up as 2 years. And even then, it could have gone on for much longer.
And what filled the book in terms of who did you have to talk to get this information? People who were alive then or people who have heard stories of the birth of this song?
My first preference, of course, was people who were there, who had first-hand knowledge. Failing that, people who knew something about it. And then, of course, there were the written accounts and there were oral recordings, which I got from the Singapore archives. Quite a lot of sources, and having been trained as a lawyer, I think when it came to drawing conclusions, it was a question of weighing the evidence to see what was corroborated and what was word against word and whose word to take.
When you said oral recordings, you are talking about not the singing of the song, but people who have talked about the Negaraku itself.
Yes. Singapore does a superb job in compiling oral history, recording its oral histories. We do nothing. So it's about time we started. If there's one thing I'd like to say, it's that we are at a critical time now. The people who knew about what happened then are now in the late 80s and 90s. This is the time to compile oral history recordings, to get records, manuscripts. Now is the time. 10 years, it'll be too late.
We're not particularly good at documenting the cultural stuff of our country. We will document buildings in terms of the architecture, the design, but we don't have the story about how it all came to be. So in your book too, then, it's a way of documenting the birth of this song.
Yes, it is. The birth of this song actually is supposed to have happened a very long time ago. So in that chapter, I don't have much first-hand experience at all. But but actually, the project was not supposed to be about Negaraku at all. It was supposed to be about the music of Malaya, because it seemed to me that it was extraordinary that if we wanted to play music from, say, the 50s or 60s, we couldn't go into a bookshop to buy a book or to go into a record shop to buy the recordings. And going online, one had to resort to, say, recordings from Holland or Indonesia or Singapore. Why was that the case? Going into it further, I realized that not many people would be interested in this subject, but something that everybody would be interested in, possibly, was their national anthem. That's why the emphasis was on the national anthem. But I'd like to say that in the 2 years' research, the number of amazing stories that surfaced was just phenomenal. I would gladly spend more time researching this because it was a time when people, ordinary people, created extraordinary music which crossed countries and continents. And I wonder sometimes what happened to that heroism, that can-do attitude, that against all odds achievements.
And we will hear some of these songs also and music that you're referring to during this performance.
Yes, that's the idea. And to perform it in, as much as possible, its original form. No tricks, no subwoofers, no jazzing it up for the MTV generation, to show them that in its original form, it's beautiful. The next stage, of course, is to jazz it up for the MTV generation.
The scores for this kind of music and songs, are they still really accessible?
Not many, but Malayan music is an oral tradition. Most of our musicians didn't read scores. They learned by ear. So today, it's very easy when we hear songs to actually transcribe what they were doing. Not a problem.
I'm asking these questions because the music that will be provided will be done by the MPO and the MPYO.
Yes, yeah. It's a combined right? orchestra.
Yes. So who's the providing them the score?
Ahmad Muriz Chet Rose, the leader, the conductor of the MPYO, who sometimes conducts the MPO, is writing the scores. And also, there are arrangements and contributions from Jenny Chin and other arrangers.
So you have music that they have to listen to, and then from there, put it down into a score and then arrange.
Yes.
Wow, quite a task. How long did this whole thing take to put together? You wrote the book, then who decided, okay, we'll do a Negaraku performance?
That decision was done, I think, about 6 months before the show.
Last year's show.
Last year's show, yes. That was in conjunction with an economic forum. It was done quite in a rush, actually. And Chaco will tell you, I'm sure, that by the time we got to rehearsing the thing, it was a complete mad rush.
Yeah, I mean, whenever you're creating something new, it was exciting. It was fun. And it was collaborative. I think Saida wasn't precious about her writing. So Zahim and I felt, okay, when we're saying these things, it would work better in this way, more of a dialogue. Or we'd sometimes take on roles and have a conversation that might have happened in
the
corridors.
So you play characters also?
Sometimes, yeah. So maybe you'll see a conversation that might have happened in Radio Malaya Kuala Lumpur when they're searching for the national anthem. What could have happened there, and we reenact it.
You know, when you write something, I assume you have a chronology of events and you follow first this happened, this. But when you're performing on stage, though, and I assume, you know, you have so much to cover, how do you decide what to throw out and what to keep?
Yes. That's Chaco, always
were you responsible?
Difficulty.
You know, because there's always this thing about adapting books to films and all that. You have 300 pages. How do you bring it down to the performance? A little over an hour?
Yes.
What did you chop? What did you think that in the book was important? And said, okay, we have to let this one go.
Well, I think the script was structured more along the songs that we wanted to perform. So then the idea was that one song would represent each period of the timeline. And if there were six periods, then we would represent it with six songs. And then the anecdotes came in related to those songs.
Humor in here?
We think so, yeah. It's slightly done. And it's fun. I think it's fun. But there's a lot of information as well. But then you have music, you have amazing musicians and performers like Dagno Faiza singing classics. You have Meilin He, you know, in one song, Dayang is accompanied by Meilin, who's classically trained. And to have these two divas come on stage and perform is something which I think is just priceless. We've also got Musli Ramli, Zamzuria Zahari, who's an Asli singer. We've got a new singer, Evelyn Feroza. And then Ahmad Muriz Che Rose is a conductor, and he brings everything together. And, you know, this wonderful orchestra and singers and musicians. And of course, but it's theatrically staged, so you have lighting, you have sound. So, that, you know, Saida is really meticulous about all these things coming together to create an experience for the audience.
Yeah, I'm very excited to have Zamzuria Zahari back in the cast, because she is a superb, she's a transcendental performer. Her performance in Usekan Rebab in 2012 was unforgettable. It was searing. And in December, she's going to be in a sequel, actually, called something to do with a prima donna, again, of the Mak Yong. When Zamzuria performs, the world listens. And many people who heard that Malantrang Bulan was going to be restaged have asked, is that girl who sings Asli going to be back? And she is very excited about that.
Saida Rustam and Chaco Varaketh from the upcoming performance of Malam Terang Bulan at the Dewan Philharmonic Petronas. Coming up, we'll find out more about the history of our national anthem, Negaraku. This is Front Row in the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9.
Pandang tak jemu, pandang tak jemu, yang hitam manis, pandang tak jemu. Hitam
You're listening to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, speaking with the writer and artistic director, Saida Rustam, who has put together a performance which tells the story of our national anthem. And with her is Chaco Varaketh, one of the performers. As a performer, Chaco, I assume, since you didn't do the research, it was done by Saida.
Yeah.
What did you learn from your being involved in this performance?
Well, I think the biggest thing I didn't know was that there was a competition to find the national anthem. There was a competition, and people from all over the world were taking part. And then some of the top composers of the time were asked to submit entries as well, were commissioned or requested to send entries. So you have like Benjamin Britten. Carlo Menotti, an opera composer. So they also submitted. So it was like a big global event, actually, the search for a national anthem.
In doing my research, I discovered that more than 500 manuscripts were sent in. And out of that, at first, they couldn't decide on any and eventually found something from Perak's state anthem. Seems kind of mind-boggling that you can get more than 500 compositions and still can't find something. What happened?
That's a good question. That's one of the things that we try and understand. But you'll have to come and see the show to find out what were the issues, what were the reasons. It wasn't just manuscripts. Sometimes it was just recordings, right, that were sent in.
How much has Nagaraku changed from 57 till 2015?
I think we've gone back to a much slower tempo. There were initiatives to change the tempo of the thing, to make it much more up-tempo and introduce an introduction at the beginning. I think, actually, what it is now is better. But actually, my favourite version is the 1957 version with a drum roll and straight into the melody.
And I remember when I was, as a child, going to the movie theatres back in the early 60s, the Nagaraku would be played. You know, you see on the screen the flag waving and this music. But I don't recall any lyrics then. When did the lyrics come in?
Quite soon after Merdeka Day. I don't think they were ready in time for Merdeka. Jamaluddin Alias, who was part of the Merdeka Choir and later became a patriotic singer of songs like Prajurit Tanah Air and Malaysia Berjaya, says that they were only ready later. So the Merdeka Choir, for the celebrations and for Merdeka Day, when they sang at Tunku's residence, practiced 10 songs, including Putra Putri, but Bandera Malaysia by Tony Fonseca, but they didn't sing any words to the national anthem. That was done only later, but within the same year, 57.
And who was responsible for the lyrics?
I don't have the answer to that. I asked Tan Sri Ahmad Marikan, who was part of Radio Malaya at that time and who was present when the Anthem Committee was doing its deliberations. He says there's no credit line for the lyrics, which to me is curious because, say, in Singapore, for example, Zubir Said is celebrated with a Google Doodle. He's got exhibitions, he's got awards and things. So why is it that the lyricist for our anthem is unknown and unacknowledged? Records seem to suggest that a Sumatran composer and wordsmith, Saiful Bahri, won the competition for best lyrics, which was held at the same time as competition for best melody for the anthem. But what happened between the time he won that and the time Tunku and the committee finally approved the Nagaraku lyrics as we know them now is a matter of conjecture.
I assume with any national anthems, there's a lot of emotional connection. And so different people will feel differently about it. I suppose also that there'll be people who are so fervent about how it should just stay the same. And you know, like say from 1957 to 2015, you said there have been changes. Who are the people responsible for saying we should up-tempo it, we should bring it down? Who are suggesting all these things?
I'm not able to say. I'm not in the government.
I'm going to put you on the spot. For instance, with the Star-Spangled Banner in 1969, Jimi Hendrix performed it with an electric guitar. Some of the conservative people were very upset with it. Apparently, at Woodstock, the crowd just loved it. What do you think about young people say, okay, I'd like to try something different with this? What kind of position should we be taking?
I'd like to go back a little bit, please, to the background behind the National Anthem Act 1968. When the National Anthem was first created in 1957, not many people took notice of it. So after Merdeka Day, it kind of just faded into quietness, as it were. Then the government said to Dol Ramli, what are you lot in Radio Malaya doing about making the anthem known and popular amongst the new citizens? So Dol Ramli had to go into the studio, and with Alfonso Soliano, he would sing one line, Alfonso would play a single note melody, and then he would sing the next line, and Alfonso would do that. That way, they tried to make people keen on the anthem. But it didn't really stick as such. So, in the following decade...
Were they trying to teach people how to sing the song or what?
Yes. People didn't know it as Negaraku. It had been known as Terang Bulan, popular song in dance halls. So, there was that attempt to make the new citizens learn this new song. It didn't really work. And so, the government decided to play this in popular places, play this at the beginning of ceremonies, play this in cinemas before people went in. And this was hugely unpopular, as it seems to be now, recently. When they put the anthem in cinemas, people are not getting up, people are playing with their phones or basically talking over it. This is what happened then. And after several attempts to persuade people to take the anthems at heart, it actually became worse. And then people were actually singing communist songs over it, hooting and jeering over the anthem. Because at that time, as you know, there were tensions other than, economic tensions. So in 1968, they passed this act, which basically said anybody who shows disrespect towards the national anthem is liable to a fine or imprisonment. This includes any act or omission which would tend to lower the prestige of the national anthem in the eyes of the public. The problem is, this test is a very subjective one. So fast forward, today we find ourselves in a position where we are very careful when it comes to the national anthem. Even in the show, Malam Terang Bulan, I am not supposed to play the original song, Terang Bulan, which inspired it.
Even though you are not trying to be disrespectful.
Yes, one has to be very, very careful. Because this is a subjective test, and I wouldn't want to fall foul of the law and commit a crime which is decided retrospectively. Who decides what is disrespectful? So people stay away from it, and I think this is a shame because actually the national anthem is a citizen's most personal expression of patriotism when it comes to music. I would think the national anthem is something that we should all be allowed to sing in whatever variations, predilections, preferences, music backings that we like. And most people will sing it with love. If some people do actually behave insultingly with it, then isn't it a facet of a mature democracy that we should be allowed to tolerate that? After all, when people protest, it's sometimes an expression of love as well for the country, an expression of concern. So why not allow it as a protest song? The fuss when Namwi did that with Negara Kuku, to me, was overrated. But you have to see it in its historical context. This is a national symbol you're talking about. If people don't allow national flags to be burned, why should they tolerate the national anthem to be messed about with, to be insulted? That's one thing. I'm saying that the average person just wants to be able to play the national anthem to a reggae beat, to a hip-hop beat, to computer music. Why can't we be allowed to use it with electric guitars?
And that might be their way of showing their love for the song, because that's how they express themselves. So...
People exactly.
Express love in different ways.
And not many people know how to play the piano or play an orchestral instrument.
Do you anticipate that if some young person were to get on his computer and do something jazzy with it, do you anticipate that would be a problem?
Based on the experience when the singer Hatan sang the last line of the anthem twice.
When was this?
2005, the finals of Piala Malaysia. That uproar led even to discussions in the Dewan Rakyat, at which somebody said, and whose name I now forget, that the singer should be thrown into the sea for doing that, for singing this final line twice. I have to say, though, putting things in perspective, that this is not the sensitivity peculiar to Malaysia. In the US, for example, recently, not just in Jimi Hendrix times, but even as recently as last year, one of the singers, popular pop divas, went and forgot her line. A line in the national anthem when singing it. And oh my goodness, people were heaping coals upon her head. I think it's because the national anthem is totemic. It's a national symbol. When you mess around with it, somehow you're messing around with the identity of your country. People shouldn't do that lightly.
Now, this performance has also been marketed, at least on some websites, that it should be seen by everybody of all ages across all walks of life. But it's going to be just be performed in KL. Are you taking it to Penang, Johor? Are you traveling with this show?
An orchestral concert is a hugely expensive affair. What I've tried to do to take it outside KL is do talks on Negaraku, on patriotic songs. I've done a talk in Melaka, done a talk in Ipoh. I would love to do a talk in Penang, if somebody could arrange it. Love to do talks elsewhere.
Is this being filmed and then perhaps distributed?
There are talks. Actually, four film companies have approached me who are interested in making a film version of the story. Yes, it may well be.
This show will be performed at the Day One Philharmonic Patronas Friday 20th.
20th?
Saturday and then Sunday.
Yeah. 20th and 21st, it's at 8:30 p.m. And the Sunday show on the 22nd is at 5 p.m.
Okay, since it's called Malam Terang Bulan, is November 20th a full moon night? Did you think about that?
No, it was more a question of when the
when the space
was,
is available.
Yes.
When everybody could come together. You know.
Shahida, based on what you have been telling me, it comes across that culture, the arts, are often used to bring people together. It's a kind of a glue. And yet when there is any kind of a budget cut, the culture folks are the first to get axed. Do you see any kind of contradiction in this?
Not at all. I don't think the culture folks are the first to get axed. I think certain bits of culture get a lot of money. I think it's a question of unequal distribution.
I listened to your interview with Ezra and Uma, and they mentioned that the unspoken thesis of your book was that a lot of the people who are in the performing arts, they were not acknowledged and therefore they were not given the kind of attention. And
well, there's two sides to this debate. One part of it is this. If you recall, there's a very famous picture of Wu Yaojin, the pianist who used to play at Majestic Hotel, standing with Tan Sri P. Ramlee. The two of them were touring the region, entertaining the troops, yeah, doing military duty. We as a nation love to berate ourselves for having treated P. Ramlee so badly. And posthumously, we confer on him Tan Sri-ship. We heap on him honours such as Seniman Negara. We create academic courses in his name. But living right under our noses are people who are in the same position. The other guy in that photo was, of course, Wu Yaojin. And today he's had to go to a nursing home. His first son passed away because of cancer, and his second son now has cancer. Where is the institutional support for that is one side of the question. The other side, of course, is people who say, well, why is it that musicians and artists should receive institutional support when other professions don't? So there's two sides to that. Me, I think that it's pretty shabby. I can give you three instances of major names. Our most major names have been left to basically be destitute. You can say all the arguments you want. Rational, yes, absolutely. Yes, people should put aside a pension for themselves. Exactly, nobody promised us a rose garden. But three of the most major names in Malaysia's music, P. Ramlee, Alfonso Soliano, and Saiful Bahri, were left basically to their own devices. Saiful Bahri, after years of service in Film Negara, left without a pension. And after his sudden death, his wife was reduced to selling kuih on the street to sustain her family. This is what we do to the family of what I consider to be Malaysia's greatest ever patriotic music composer, Saiful Bahri, who wrote Prajurit Tanah Air and Malaysia Berjaya. As late as during the Lahat Datu incursion, our government broadcast Saiful Bahri's music incessantly as part of psychological warfare on the airwaves. Yet his family was given, I think, 300 ringgit after a 10-year war to claim it. This is what we do to our artists. So yes, rationally, nobody owes us a living, but I ask people to consider, is this right?
Okay, Malam Terang Bulan will play Friday 20th November, Saturday November 21st at 8:30 p.m. and Sunday November 22nd at 5 p.m. at the Day One Philharmonic Patronus. The stage will be filled with luminaries including Dayang Nur Faiza, Datuk Zahim Al-Bakri, Chako, who's sitting right here with us. And tickets are priced from 80 to 200. All proceeds will be channeled to various organizations related to arts and heritage in Malaysia. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.